You're listening to The Impromptu on the Hologram Radio Network, a multifaceted show discussing how technology, art, design, and equality converge on topics that matter most to us. From gaming culture to film and other forms of media, we examine the creative process and how the decisions we make shape our perceptions and lives. This is Alex Knight, and I am joined by Michael Norton. Episode 90, WWDC 2017, Part 1. Today on the podcast, the moment we've anxiously been anticipating for months, Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, which was on June 6th. And it was a jam-packed keynote. In fact, so jam-packed that there was just way too much for us to discuss in one episode. So what we've done is a two-part episode, which we've decided to release at the same time so you can just download it and listen to it at your leisure. So stay tuned for that discussion coming up next on The Impromptu. When everything is broken. So WWDC 2017 was this week, and it was a complete letdown, right, Michael?
Yep. So disappointing. Apple did none of the things I said they were going to do. Oh, wait, they did most of them.
It was a really long keynote, but it needed to be. And I'm sure it could have gone for 3.5 hours or
They probably could have talked about more things. But some of it's probably still in flux, like the HomePod. They probably still haven't fleshed out all of the software for that yet. But we'll get into all that. First off, obviously Apple announced a crap load of things. iOS 11, watchOS 4, macOS 10.13, high Sierra.
And of course, everyone thought that was a joke when he announced, and I did too.
But yeah.
It's fine. I mean, it's, you know, the name isn't a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, on the talk show, he joked they thought about calling it Snow Sierra because it's basically the Snow Leopard release, which makes sense. I mean, but we'll get to that. First, we'll start off with iPhone, iOS 11 on iPhone. So, more generally, iOS 11 is a drastic refinement of the iOS 10 platform. They've expanded functionality in several ways, added a bunch of features left, right, and center. One of the big things that they're pushing is a shift to a new photo and video framework. They are moving from H.264 to H.265. We are moving past MP4 all the way into HEVC, which stands for High Efficiency Video Codec. So 4K video will now take up less space on your iPhone than it did before, which is awesome. And for any device with an A9 chip or higher, so that means the 6S, the SE, the 7, the old iPad Pros, and anything newer than that, gains HEVC hardware encoding and decoding. So they've had this lying in wait for several years, planning it, and they finally threw the switch in iOS 11. So now video will take up far less space, same quality, and because of the hardware support, it will not slow down your phone compared to H.264. So everything will effectively be the same, except you're going to have a lot of free flash storage space. And they're doing the same thing to photos. So photos, they're using a new format that's actually created by Nokia called HEIC, HEIF, which is High Efficiency Image Format. So I think it borrows from the HEVC codec, only for still frames. And it's legit. Like, they gave an example. a 2 megabyte JPEG. So like the full resolution of the 7 Plus, 2 megabyte JPEG is a 1.2 megabyte HEIF file. So we're talking about slashing the file size by almost 50%, cutting it almost right down the middle. So that's going to lead to a massive, massive decrease in how much size you're taking up. Because I mean, what takes up the most space on people's phones? Photos and videos that they've shot.
Yeah.
So with these new formats, they're cutting the file sizes basically in half. So you can shoot twice as much stuff without running out of space, which is huge. Obviously, they're building support for these codecs into High Sierra as well. So every Mac and every iPhone and every iPad will take advantage of that, and they'll be able to view these formats.
There's no way to store the original uncompressed image at all?
Oh, no. You can still save in RAW.
Okay.
It just exports as HEIF.
And so, and the RAW images, do those get stored in iCloud as RAW?
No, the camera app still doesn't support RAW. It is in the camera API. So obviously, if you have a third-party camera app and you turn RAW on, then it gets saved. But the default camera app still doesn't do that, which is unfortunate. But I mean, as long as it's in the API, there will be third-party apps to pick up that slack.
But this new, going back to this new compression format, this is superior than what was being used before anyway.
Yes.
So, I mean, if you were happy with the photos you had before, I mean, this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah. It's better.
For most
it takes
people.
Up less space. It's actually higher quality than JPEG.
Right.
It's a lossless format. So it's effectively similar to RAW, but you can't edit things afterwards.
I mean, this is only going to disappoint all but the smallest amount of purists that need for archival purposes, which in that case, get a DSLR. I mean,
well, yeah,
you know, it's a phone.
Or get a third-party camera app
right.
that shoots in RAW.
Of course, and those are available, but I
have 5 of them.
This is really exciting to see these kinds of improvements happen.
Yeah, like there's a lot of tweaks under the surface that are going on with these releases. Obviously, there's a ton of UI changes. We're seeing more and more of the what I call editorial UI, the big title UI that's seen in news and music is now in most of the default apps. A bunch of other things have been overhauled. There's a new control center that takes up the entire screen. Everything is now a 3D touch widget, so you can pop it open to get more controls for music, HomeKit, all of that stuff.
Yeah, the control center is going to take some time to get used to, but
I think
it pretty much gives everyone finally at this point, there's no reason to complain because it's not for lacking in features, right? Like a lot
yeah.
of people wanted access to like, well, how can I get to the settings app? How can I get to the Wi-Fi settings without having to open the settings app and require all these extra steps? So now you can finally do all that stuff. You can really access all those controls from your lock screen. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that. Overall, the UI has been polished and tweaked. The signal strength dots have been replaced with bars again. We're back to bars. Bars are back. Woo!
Bars are better for sure.
They are.
I'm not even sure why they changed it to dots in the first place.
Oh, we'll get to that once
okay.
I've outlined
right.
the rest of the changes. So then the other big change, the notification center is now the lock screen. So if you pull down from the top, what you get is the lock screen. And if you swipe that up a little bit, it shows you recent notifications. And then you can clear them with 3D touch, of course. And then to get back to whatever app you were in or the home screen, you just swipe up from the bottom. Then they have finally changed the video player UI. Instead of the big white panels at the top and bottom with a big volume modal in the middle, we now have dark UI with little pill buttons at the edges. The volume is now at the top right. The controls to close the video or make it not full screen are at the top left. And along the bottom, you have a long pill with subtitles, play, pause, back 10 seconds, forward 10 seconds, scrubber, and the AirPlay button, which is now back after having been gone.
Yeah, a lot of people are really happy about that. And you know, when the first time I saw that UI, I realized just how old the old player UI really was. Look, it was starting to look really dated.
Yeah, so now it just kind of blends in with the video, which is really nice. But what we're getting at here with all of these changes, things are becoming card-like, things are becoming floating at the edges, but not quite at the edges. A sizable padding around with the editorial UI, what used to be the title bar at the top of apps, you know, where you had the title just kind of floating at the top there, kind of small. Now you've got this big title that's further down, and there's a noticeable gutter between that title and the top of the screen. What did these changes all add up to? Oh, I don't know. Possibly some sort of edgeless display?
Oh, come on. That's just a pipe dream.
Yeah.
That's never happening.
Yeah, no, it's never going to happen. No.
No.
These changes are all very clearly to support the iPhone 8. The titles, for example, get out of the way of the supposed dip in the screen at the top where the camera and various sensors will live. The signal bars coming back is because the bars take up less horizontal space than the dots, meaning that whole thing can go off to the left at the top of the new screen next to the dip. I think they'll probably change the carrier information because right now that's going to take up too much room. They might truncate it or they might get rid of it entirely. Android hasn't shown carrier information on the title bar in years. As well, they'll probably cull some of the things at the right side of the title bar. Some of that stuff you don't really need. Like what's on mine right now? I've got the location. I've got the fact that I have an alarm, Bluetooth, and battery. Well, the alarm one can probably go. So yeah, a lot of these UI changes seem to be moving towards the idea of having no edge to the screen or very little edge to the screen, where things are just kind of floating in space. And that's actually reflected in changes to UIKit this year. So there are two new APIs or two new properties to UIKit that very much hint at an edgeless display. One of those is, I forget the exact name of the property, but it's something like Content Safe Area Guide or something. And the description for it is basically that you're defining a bleed area for your app content. So, you know how on business cards, if you're designing a business card, you create a bleed line where the card is supposed to be cut so no content can go outside of that box because otherwise it might get cut off.
Yeah.
The reason that is now in UIKit is because of an edgeless display. Because if you have an edgeless display, you don't necessarily want the content spilling all the way onto the edge.
Of course.
You're going to want stuff to kind of sit in line in the middle. It'll basically define, this is the shape of the screen. This is where content can go. Do not go outside of these boundaries. And that's like part of auto layout now. So as long as you're supporting auto layout properly and you're doing all the right things, chances are you have nothing to worry about. But if you're doing a lot of custom stuff, you might be in trouble. It's a struggle to actually think of all the stuff that's been announced because there's so much of it.
Well, that's the problem a lot of people have had. But I mean, yeah, it's not possible that we can cover every last little detail.
We can't cover everything. So, I mean,
so the highlights.
That's like the highlights for iPhone. I mean, there's a bunch of other stuff, but yeah.
I mean, in iOS 11 doesn't have any, I mean, there are some radical changes in certain areas, like we talked about with Control Center and Notification Center.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's still the same iOS, really, that you, it's not like it's not recognizable.
No.
I mean, there are other touches in the area of the OS, sort of a UI, I don't know if UI paradigm is the right word, but certainly a UI convention that they've changed the way that the headings looked and stuff like that on the UI, but it's nothing groundbreaking.
No.
It's just like little touches here
and
there.
I mean, they've basically made things more consistent. They've brought things in line. They've modernized some things. Siri has been updated. So Siri is now using machine learning and they've given it a new voice that's powered by machine learning somehow. It can say words differently. So like,
and it is a massive improvement. I mean, it sounds a lot more human, a lot more realistic.
Actually, hey Siri, how's it going?
Excellent.
What's the weather today?
Okay, here's the weather for today.
So as you can see, the voice is considerably improved. And while I haven't fully tested what it's capable of, it's certainly capable of responding to slightly more complex queries. So continuing to use the weather as an example. Hey Siri, what's the weather for the rest of today?
It's currently partly cloudy and 18 degrees in Port Coquitlam. Expect clear sky starting around 8 p.m. tonight, which will likely continue until 11 p.m. Temperatures will range from a high of 18 at 6:30 p.m. to a low of 12 around 11 p.m.
That's a lot more than she's ever said before for that type of request.
Yes. Yes,
they usually
is.
Just say like, oh, this is the temperature right now, and like, that's it.
Yeah. So Siri now understands the context of what is the weather for the rest of today? So it understands, oh, I'm looking for what is the weather going to do between now and midnight?
And how is it going to affect you?
Exactly.
Like, I'm sure if it was raining, if it was going to rain, it would probably say, oh, by the way, you probably need a jacket and
it might not say
umbrella.
That exactly, but it'll mention
but
that it's going to rain.
Say something.
Yes, exactly. So if it was going to rain later, say at like 10, it's like, oh, it's going to rain starting at 10. Oh, okay.
And speaking of Siri, I've heard this from other people that it is smarter, but it's smarter in little ways.
Yeah.
Not earth shattering, but noticeable.
Yeah. And I think with iOS 11 now, with the new machine learning platform, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Data collection.
Well, it's not data collection. They have found a way to keep it private.
But they're still sending data back to Apple. They have to, otherwise
yes.
Siri, there's no way for Siri to improve.
Exactly. So, I mean, a lot of the machine learning is happening on device. So data that you have is crunched. Requests that are made to Apple are still anonymized.
Of course.
But
I think they even mentioned that in the keynote.
Yes. But that means that Siri on device is actually learning things about you as time goes on. So at a certain point, I think the service is going to reach an inflection point where with iOS 11, the data that's been crunched and all of the little tweaks they've made in the background will kind of come together and probably by this time next year, Siri will be a lot better than how it is now.
And what will make that, or what will help that situation is the fact that now for the first time, Siri is the same Siri on all of your devices. It's actually, the data is synced between
Yes.
it.
Siri is now part of iCloud, so you can sync everything that Siri knows about you across all of your devices. So you can opt in.
And so tell me why that's not creepy.
Because Apple doesn't need to sell your data for ads.
Of course.
And it's encrypted to you personally. So they can't actually read that data, just like iMessage. Speaking of iMessage, that's another big service improvement. iMessage is now also part of iCloud.
And the angels are singing,
yes,
rejoicing.
So now when you sign into a new device, all of your messages will appear. And that is also encrypted and protected, etc., using local device encryption keys and so on and so forth. So that's been fully upgraded. Siri's been upgraded. There are a number of improvements to HomeKit. They're now supporting things like sprinklers and other stuff. They've also announced that HomeKit does not require the authentication chip if you are doing development with HomeKit. So to actually ship and sell a product, you still need certification and you need to include the authentication chip. But if you're developing HomeKit accessories, you only need to do software authentication. So they showed an example where somebody had an Arduino chip hooked up to something and it was connected to HomeKit. It didn't have any of the custom hardware that's required for HomeKit, but it worked with it because it's in development mode. So this should drastically speed up development of HomeKit accessories because now you can just work on this stuff, and then at the end when it's ready to go, then you go through the certification process and add the hardware authentication chip. So that should make things easier for companies to build products for HomeKit.
Oh yeah.
So that's a huge step forward. Okay.
And I feel like it's almost not necessarily an unsung hero, but it's not a super sexy thing that a lot of people talk about. But it will be. This is all this work into HomeKit and stuff like that. They're clearly trying to build a foundation for the future as we get more and more devices in the home, as it becomes more ubiquitous. We're not quite there yet. It may take a few more years.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think more people will start talking about this stuff in the next couple of years.
Absolutely. I mean, people want control over their lives. So, I mean, even with something as simple as lighting, like light bulbs, to be able to walk into your house and have it turn the lights on for you, or to be able to turn all the lights on and off from your phone, it's huge. Like, it saves a ton of time. Like, imagine if you had 20 or 30 lights in your house. You're going to walk over to each one and turn it off or turn it on? No. You're not, like, that's frustrating.
What I'm waiting for in HomeKit is the feature where I come home and I say, tea, Earl Grey, hot.
Well, if somebody builds a smart tea kettle, maybe.
That sounds doable.
Yeah.
And that doesn't sound that far off.
It's possible.
I mean, we have decent voice activation features. You could build that into a kettle.
Oh, yeah, probably.
There's no reason why you couldn't.
Oh, yeah, you could do that. I mean, you probably wouldn't be able to get it down to the Patrick Stewart thing, but you could say, Siri, make me a cup of Earl Grey tea. And then it would know, oh, there's a smart tea kettle connected to HomeKit through whatever HomeKit hub you happen to be using. And yeah, like, it'll just issue the command, make Earl Grey tea. The kettle will go, oh yeah. Of course, that would be contingent on the kettle having access to multiple blends of tea.
Uh-huh.
But yeah.
Yeah,
that's a different problem.
Okay, well, so let's keep moving because we got a lot.
Yeah, we have lots. We're going at WWDC pace here. Okay, so moving on.
Craig Federighi mode here.
Moving on. Core ML, huge shift. So, like I was expecting, I mean, we talked about this. I was like, oh yeah, they're going to have Neural Kit or AI Kit. Turns out it's called Core ML. It is a fundamental base system level machine learning framework that runs on current hardware and future hardware. And it allows developers to leverage machine learning on device. So this is TensorFlow Lite baked into iOS, available for development right now. So Apple has totally leapfrogged over that. And the best part is it can actually use TensorFlow models. So if you've been developing with TensorFlow, you can migrate that data, migrate your trained AI over to Core ML, and then run it on the iPhone or an iPad. Super easy. So someone, I actually saw today, someone made a demo app using Core ML and the new Vision API. So that's another big thing they announced. They now have computer vision as an API directly in the system. So you can utilize the iPhone camera to detect things. So what they did was they built a camera app that detected dogs. It probably took them like 5 or 10 minutes to do it. So I saw the video of them testing it out. It is insanely fast. I mean, they were probably using a trained AI that already knew how to identify things, but it was blazing fast. So they were pointing the phone, looking out at WWDC, where adorably there are several canine dogs on duty. That's been on Twitter the past few days.
I haven't seen this video. When did this come out?
Today.
Okay.
Like a few hours ago.
I'll check it out.
It was on
link in the show notes.
It was on my timeline. I can't remember. But yeah. So he's got the phone out. He's like looking around. It goes, no cute dogs here. No cute dogs here. Frowny face. Then he points it at the dog and it instantly goes, good boy. Turns it away from the dog. No cute dogs here. Back to the dog. Good boy. Like instantly.
That's impressive.
The minute the camera is focused on the dog, it recognizes there's a dog in the frame.
Yeah, I mean, all the stuff that they demoed in the keynote looked really impressive. I mean, I've seen it now on, I mean, you showed me the AR stuff on your phone. It looks really good. It looks really good.
Yeah.
And I guess this means that, I mean, this basically cements the idea, the rumor that the iPhone 8 is going to definitely have some kind of 3D camera that will have AR features built into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was the other big thing, of course, AR kit. Apple has essentially created the first consumer platform for augmented reality. Every iPhone, every iPad can do it. It is honestly insane that they've managed to make this work with just a regular camera. Like, I can open the sample code, shows me the camera, and I can put a teacup on a table and walk around it and get close to it and walk away, and it's still at that exact place on the table with just a regular camera.
I wasn't expecting that at the keynote. And to be honest, the fact that it works this well with the existing iPhone camera is really impressive.
Yeah, the math that they have to be running to be able to do that without an infrared depth sensor is insane. Like, I don't know what magic they've worked, but it's amazing. So you can only imagine how much better it's going to be once they add that depth sensor. Because then it can do things like gestures, you can actually grab AR objects, things like that. Controls that appear in midair, you can just literally turn them or tap them, like HoloLens kind of stuff. And that'll be possible with the iPhone 8, as you said, because supposedly the iPhone 8 does have an infrared depth sensor on the back camera, and supposedly the front camera as well. For facial recognition. So right now, ARKit is already really impressive, but once that hardware comes out, it's going to be even more so. And then 1 or 2 years down the road, once all of these apps have been built that use ARKit, oh, look, here are the Apple glasses. And then, oh, all of your apps work right out of the box. Just put the glasses on and bam.
And it's good that they're getting the experience now with the AR stuff and they've got the API, because just imagine what they'll be able to do maybe in a few years with Apple Car with a heads-up display and with AR.
Yep, that too. Exactly. So I can definitely see iOS 12, if the glasses come out next year, iOS 12, Apple Maps will be fully integrated into ARKit. And then, oh, look, you put the glasses on, you have walking directions anywhere you want to go, driving directions anywhere you want to go. When they finally unveil the car, I don't think they're going to sell an actual car. I think they've pivoted. They are going to sell a car platform with partnered vehicles. So like if you buy a new BMW with CarKit, it'll have the self-driving, it'll have the augmented reality windshield, all of that stuff will come standard, and that'll all be baked in with ARKit. So the same functionality that's in the glasses, that's in the phone, will also be in the car and any other Apple device that has a camera. It's so clear to see the trajectory here. They're just laying foundations, and it's just going to explode over the next 2 or 3 years. Because once apps start getting built, once games start getting built that take advantage of this, they already announced that Pokemon Go is going to upgrade to use ARKit. So instead of that fake AR where the Pokemon are just kind of floating in midair, it will now actually place Pokemon on surfaces. And when you throw a Pokeball, it will actually bounce off of those surfaces.
Yeah, and it presumably will take advantage of all the ARKit stuff. So the lighting and shadows, and it's going to look a lot better.
Yeah, exactly. So the other thing ARKit does, it actually changes the lighting on the 3D objects to match what's going on in reality.
Yeah, that's got to be very computationally expensive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
But of course, we know how good the Apple Silicon is, so.
Yeah. I mean, they've been optimizing for this for a long time. Like their image processing pipeline, they've probably been building for this for at least 2 or 3 years so that their chips will be able to handle it.
So shall we maybe move from AR to the next thing?
Okay. So next thing, Apple TV and the surprise announcement of the Siri speaker.
I'm so excited for this 4K Apple TV. I mean, finally they gave us a 4K TV.
No, I'm sorry, they didn't announce that.
Oh shit, I must have been dreaming. That was a dream.
Yep. No, sorry. No 4K Apple TV.
Damn it.
There will be one. I don't know why they didn't announce it this week. But
there's just too much. I mean, there's always a September event or October event.
I mean, honestly, they'll probably ship it with the HomePod in December or something.
Do we even really need an event for 4K Apple TV? I don't think we do.
Probably not. I mean, if it's the same OS, if it's effectively the same hardware, they haven't changed anything except instead of an A8 chip, it has an A9 chip. Who cares? And the key thing about the A9 chip, remember how I was saying the A9 chip and above have hardware decoding for HEVC?
Yeah.
So the new Apple TV, if it has an A9, it'll be able to decode 4K video.
There we go.
And because HEVC takes up less space than H.264, you'll be able to stream 4K video from iTunes onto your Apple TV.
But of course, there is no 4K content on iTunes, right?
Not yet.
Well, That's the next big deal.
I've heard that's in the works. So,
because why release a 4K Apple TV if you've got nothing for it?
Exactly. So,
I mean, that's not to say that you don't get it on other services. Obviously, Amazon Prime has 4K.
Yeah, and Netflix. So that was like the big announcement for Apple TV this year. Amazon Prime is coming to Apple TV, and it'll be integrated into the TV app, which we still don't have in Canada. Tim Cook, if you're listening, please bring it to Canada. Okay, so that's Apple TV. Then there's the HomePod. So the Siri speaker turned out to be effectively Apple's version of the Sonos or a reborn iPod Hi-Fi, however you want to look at it. It's a high-quality dynamic virtual surround sound speaker that can actually read the acoustics of a room and use multiple tweeters and woofers to generate a perfect surround signal that bounces off the walls it detects in such a way that the sound is perfect no matter what room it's in. And on top of that, it supports the new AirPlay 2. So there's a new version of AirPlay. They kind of snuck it in
into
while they were talking about all this stuff.
Yeah.
So AirPlay 2 is exactly like AirPlay, except it basically copies what Sonos does. So you can now AirPlay audio to multiple speakers at the same time. So with AirPlay 2, you can have multiple HomePods, two specifically, left and right, pump music to them, and then you have stereo surround sound.
So what happened to the other, the older AirPlay spec? Is it still, is it backwards compatible?
Oh, yeah, it's backwards compatible. This just adds the ability to go multi-speaker with your audio. So the future 4K Apple TV supporting AirPlay 2 with the new version of tvOS could use two HomePods as a surround sound system.
So is this something that an AirPlay 1 supported device could just be firmware upgraded to support? Is this all done in software?
Yeah. AirPlay 2 is in iOS 11. So any device that updates to iOS 11 or tvOS 11 or watchOS 4 will be using AirPlay 2. And it's backwards compatible, so any existing AirPlay device will work with it.
And though, hopefully they've snuck in some performance improvements for AirPlay, because sometimes it can get, it works okay, but sometimes you get dropouts or glitches.
Yeah, they've probably fixed a bunch of that. Obviously the HomePod will probably have the W1 chip in it, so it'll easily pair with all of your devices.
Yeah, it helps if you have the processing for it.
Yeah. I think there's an A9 chip in the HomePod, or an A8 chip. I forget which one it was. And then, of course, Siri. So it has Siri baked into it through the A chip. And it has a large spherical touchscreen on the top. So when you activate Siri, it actually has this little glowy thing on the top that shows that Siri's running. And
I thought that looked really cool. I don't know how they're doing that on the hardware. But anyway,
I'm not sure. We'll hear more about this device closer to the ship date. So it doesn't ship until December, and it only ships in a few countries, not Canada. So we're going to have to wait till next year to get a HomePod. It retails for $379. So it'll probably be like $429 or $450 here, something like that.
You can, I'm not sure if you mentioned, but you can join two of them. I don't know if you can do more than two.
Oh, you could probably do more than two. Like,
that's a cool feature.
Depending on how many speakers AirPlay 2 can output to, you can just add HomePods to your heart's content and create some kind of monster.
I'm calling it now. Somebody is going to do a video of that to see how many you can have in a room.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And it'll be like a tower.
It'll be an utter cacophony of, well, maybe not. I mean, if it does the smart surround thing, maybe it detects that there's this many, and it figures out where they are in the room, and then it can actually do center channel, left channel, right channel.
I was going to say, it'd be cool to see, like, you know, how it would sound if you had one in each corner of a perfectly square room.
Yeah.
To really fill the room.
Sitting in the middle.
Like, yeah.
That could be interesting.
That could be an interesting effect.
Yeah. It depends how clever it is, I guess. Obviously, people will test that once it comes out, and we'll find out exactly what can be done with it. But I mean, even with just one of them, it's an excellent speaker. It'll work with every single device you have. For those that want something like an Echo, it has all the Siri stuff. The screen on the top should actually display content, possibly. We've only seen it display the Siri dot, but I think it'll actually display more than that. I think it'll kind of be like a watchOS thing where it'll just kind of surface some important information if it needs to. Like, it'll kind of be an ambient thing where if you ask Siri for your calendar or something, it might surface that.
So much for all the third-party speaker options in the Apple retail stores. I mean, they're just going to get rid of them because they're going to be crap compared to that.
They'll still sell those. They'll still sell those.
They might
pare the selection down a bit. Yeah, I could see them doing that. But obviously the HomePod is a bit more expensive than some of the options they currently carry.
They do have some speaker options that are like $300-$400 right now.
They do. Yeah. They have the more expensive Bose ones.
It's just going to be funny seeing, you know, comparably speaking, this new HomePod next to one of the other Bose products, and it's going to blow it out of the water. Why even have it in the store?
Well, yeah, I mean, they've clearly built this speaker to be extremely high quality. Like the drivers that they've put in it, all of the woofers and tweeters, like this is a professional quality speaker. No doubt. Everyone that's heard it in person has said it's really excellent. And obviously we'll have to see how it plays out. But
yeah, and because of this smart sensing technology in it, I can only imagine it probably, for that price point, it probably will sound more expensive than it actually is.
Yeah.
Because of what it's doing.
Yeah. Because it actually detects the shape of the room, the acoustics in the room, and then tailors the sound to match that. Yeah, it will sound better than it is because it's like managed to dynamically alter the sound.
Yeah, so wondering if it's actually doing any like EQ adjustments too.
I think so.
Like
possibly.
an audio EQ thing.
Yeah, like when they talked about it, they basically showed like these acoustic waves coming out and bouncing back to the HomePod, and it was like it can read the shape of the room, and then it just sends particular sounds out of certain directions so that you can hear everything. So it must use the A chip to run acoustic angle calculations where it goes, okay, I bounce this sound over here and it comes back in this many seconds. So it kind of uses that to figure out the shape of the room, and then it calculates, okay, what's the best angle I can send these channels out so that it'll sound good to somebody sitting here. So there might be a setup process where you have to identify where you're sitting in the room or something,
sure.
Or the optimal place you want to hear the sound. But we'll find that all out closer to December, no doubt. Probably at the September Apple event, or if they have an October event, we'll probably hear it there.
I just can't help but point this out. People were insulting the name, saying this is a terrible name. I think it's a really good name.
It's an iPod for your home.
Well, and people were saying, why didn't they call it? They should have called it, you know, an iPod. I'm like, no. First of all, it's a nice homage to the iPod, but it isn't an iPod. You need to differentiate. This is really a next generation product.
Yeah. I mean,
and there's nothing wrong with HomePod. It's not a bad name.
No. It's grown on me. Like, the first time I heard them say it, I was like, but it just makes sense. Like, it's an iPod for your home.
It is logical.
Exactly. It's a logical name. And I mean, I would dare people to come up with a better name, because Siri speaker, super generic.
Of course, there were lots of jokes about, well, this is just an iPod. This is kind of like what the iPod Hi-Fi was.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's...
But better, that's, a lot better.
Yeah, like that's what they're going for. They're going for this high-quality sound experience. That's the primary focus of the device. And then they crammed all the smart stuff in there too. And more importantly, they're using the smart stuff to make the sound experience better through the smart room detection. So they've kind of just married these two technologies together to create something superior that actually gives a damn about sound. Because, I mean, they even said it in the keynote, like, you've got wireless speakers that sound pretty good but aren't smart. You've got smart speakers that sound terrible. So we made something that sounds great and is smart.
Yeah, it solves a problem.
Yeah.
It solves a big problem. So much for Sonos.
Yeah, exactly. I would actually not be surprised if Sonos supports AirPlay 2 just to kind of stay alive. I mean, obviously people with Android can use Sonos.
I mean, so Apple could acquire Sonos, but it sounds like with the team, the audio team they have, they don't need to.
No, not really. With AirPlay 2, you don't really need Sonos because you can just cobble together whatever AirPlay speakers you want and it'll chain them all together as if it was Sonos.
Okay, let's move on. You've been listening to the Impromptu One Hologram Radio. I'm Alex Knight, joined by Michael Norton, as always. If you'd like to show your support for this podcast and the work that we do here, the single best way to do that is to go to patreon.com/hologramradio and donate today. Subscribe to the podcast in iTunes to ensure you get every new episode each and every week. And do leave us a review if you have a moment that makes us feel good, as well as helps other people find the podcast. We're also available in Google Play Music, TuneIn, and Stitcher as well if you'd like to stream it there, and wherever else you can find podcasts. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at The Impromptu. Michael Norton is at Zen Impulse. I'm at Zero Distraction. And if you'd like to send us feedback the old-fashioned way, you can email us at theimpromptu@hologramradio.org, and that will go to both myself and Michael.
And on that note, thanks for listening, everyone. See you next time.